Okay, you know that feeling? That sudden email that needs, like, an immediate reply.
Oh yeah, or getting called on completely cold in a meeting.
Totally. Or someone hands you the mic for a toast you weren't expecting at all.
Right. Or maybe even worse, the tech just dies mid-presentation and
Yeah.
suddenly it's just you.
And your heart starts pounding, right? Palms get sweaty, maybe that dry mouth thing happens.
Oh, what the source material actually calls a plumbing reversal. It's pure fight or flight kicking in.
And you're just thinking, okay. This is it. And it's really, really SCKS. You feel this immense pressure to sound smart.
Collected, maybe even witty.
Yeah. And definitely not look foolish.
Those are exactly the moments we're talking about. Spontaneous communication, unprepared, unscripted.
And that's precisely what this deep dive is all about today. We're tackling how you can think faster, talk smarter, when you're put on the spot like that.
We've been digging to some really great source material for this, pulling out key insights, especially from Think Faster, Talk Smarter.
Right. So our mission here is to help you understand why these moments feel so intense,
Yeah.
so visceral.
And maybe more importantly, to unpack some really practical techniques and mindsets too, things that can help you not just survive, but actually, handle them well.
Feel more comfortable doing it, maybe even shine sometimes.
Exactly. Because
Yeah.
the big takeaway really from this material is that being good at this stuff, it isn't some kind of magic. It's not just something you're born with.
It's definitely a skill, something you can learn and actually get better at.
Absolutely.
So let's dive right in. Why is this so hard for so many of us? Spontaneous communication. And seriously, if this feels like you're really not alone in this.
Well, it's everywhere, isn't it? The book points out it's not just like formal Q&A sessions. It's responding off the cuff when you're networking. That sudden virtual chat popping up from a senior leader.
Oh, that's terrifying. Or the completely unexpected wedding toast request.
Right. And sometimes we even kind of put ourselves in that position, don't we?
What do you mean?
Like when you have to smooth over something awkward you just said, a faux pas.
Okay. Damage control.
Yeah. Or having to completely improvise when, your slides disappear or your notes vanish.
Or just needing to give a really sincere apology right then and there.
Exactly. And those experiences, especially the negative ones, they can stick with you for a long time.
The author mentions Irma, the librarian. That story was rough.
Oh, yeah. Decades of avoiding spontaneous speaking, all because a high school teacher said her answer was, quote, the worst, most stupid answer. Just brutal.
Awful. And you could see how one comment like that could just create this spiral, right? The fear makes you perform worse,
Yeah.
which just ramps up the fear for next time.
It absolutely can. And that fear, it often leads us to just check out, avoid participating.
Sit in the back, turn off the camera on Zoom calls.
Decline opportunities where you might get called on.
And we start telling ourselves stories about it, like, oh, impromptu speaking just isn't my thing.
I'm too shy for that. Or, well, I'm more of a numbers person, not a talker.
We treat it like it's this fixed part of our personality instead of something we could actually work on.
Which is exactly the idea this material pushes back on.
Yeah.
The real key isn't some innate talent, some gift of gab.
It's practice and preparation. Seems weird for spontaneity, but
Yeah.
preparation.
It does seem weird. But think about learning a sport or an instrument.
Okay.
You learn the basics first,
Yeah.
right? The principles. Then you drill them. Practice.
Right. Then you try it out in a real game or a performance.
Exactly. And you build confidence by trusting that training, by being willing to experiment, maybe mess up a bit.
So the paradox is you actually have to prepare in advance to be good spontaneously.
That's it, that upfront work. That's what gives you the flexibility, the agility you need in the moment.
So this approach we're looking at, it lays out a method. First, really understand why we struggle. What are the obstacles?
And then build up a toolkit, learn some practical tools and techniques.
Okay, let's start with the big one then. Managing that just immediate wave of anxiety that washes over you.
Yeah, and the material makes a really key point here. The goal isn't to like completely eliminate anxiety.
No, I thought that was the whole point.
Well, actually, a moderate amount of anxiety can be good for you.
Good.
It can give you energy, sharpen your focus. There's even research suggesting that short bursts of stress, that acute stress, can actually help your memory.
Okay. So if we're not trying to zap it completely, how do we stop it from just derailing us? What can we actually do?
Okay, so one interesting physical trick mentioned is about body temperature. Anxiety makes you hotter.
Right.
Yeah, you feel flushed.
So cooling your hands, literally just holding a cold bottle of water or a cold glass, can help bring down that physical stress response.
That's surprisingly simple. But yeah, I can see that. Easy enough to keep a cold drink nearby.
Right. Another really simple but powerful thing, just buy yourself some time. It is absolutely okay to pause.
But doesn't that feel awkward? Like you're signaling, uh-oh, I'm stuck.
That's what we fear, isn't it? But often, a short pause, just a beat, it gives you space to gather your thoughts. And it can actually make your answers sound more thoughtful, more considered.
Okay.
You can even use that moment strategically. Ask a general question back to the audience, get them thinking for a second, takes the spotlight off you just briefly.
Like the example in the book, the teacher saying something like, before we move on, maybe take a moment and think how you could apply this.
Exactly. It turns that little silence into a shared reflection. And yeah, having a few pre-planned generic questions like that in your back pocket for situations you might anticipate, super useful.
Got it. What else?
Rationalization can help too, just reminding yourself, okay, what's the absolute worst thing that could happen here? Usually it's not that catastrophic.
And reminding yourself people aren't usually scrutinizing you as much as you think.
Exactly. They're mostly caught up in their own stuff. And having a personal plan, what the author calls an anxiety management plan, or AMP, that can be key.
An AMP, like a little routine?
Yeah, your go-to micro routine. Like for the author, when he got asked that weird describe yourself as an onion question in an interview.
Right.
His AMP was just deep breath and repeat the mantra, I have value to offer. Simple. Quick.
A deep breath and a quick reminder to yourself. Something you can do anywhere instantly.
Totally. Think of it as building your own little spontaneous speaking toolkit. Maybe it's that cold water bottle, a throat lozenge, a little note card with your mantra on it.
Little things that give you back a tiny bit of control when you feel that anxiety rising.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's tackling the physical side, the anxiety. But what about the mental blocks? That feeling of your brain just freezing up, especially that drive to be perfect.
Yeah, this is where our own thinking habits can really trip us up. Under pressure, our brains love shortcuts, right?
Yeah.
Heuristics. We fall back on familiar patterns.
Makes sense. Less effort.
Right.
Yeah.
But the trick isn't to, like, get rid of those shortcuts entirely. It's becoming aware of them. So you can consciously choose to ignore them sometimes.
So you can catch yourself defaulting to the usual pattern and decide, nope, not this time.
Precisely. There's this game mentioned, Shout the Wrong Name, where people are told to get it wrong, but they still struggle because that internal judge is so strong.
Huh. Yeah, I can imagine that being hard.
It shows how much we're constantly monitoring ourselves. And actually, reducing the anxiety also helps lessen that reliance on automatic patterns. You could even try, like, picking one communication habit you have and deliberately breaking it for a week. Just see what happens.
Ooh, that sounds edgy, but interesting.
It is. Because this fixation on getting it perfect, on constantly judging ourselves as we speak, it just eats up brain power.
The mental energy you need to actually be creative or responsive in the moment?
Exactly. So trying to be perfect can actually make you worse at spontaneous speaking.
So what's the alternative?
The book offers two really powerful reframes here. First, dare to be dull.
Dare to be dull. That sounds counterintuitive for speaking advice.
I know. But it just means lowering the pressure on yourself to be brilliant or witty every single second. Just get the idea out. Focus on communicating, not performing. Stop that constant self-monitoring and judging.
Okay, so Dare to Be Dull is about just starting, just doing it. What was the second one?
Embrace mistakes.
Easier said than done, maybe.
Maybe. But it's about fundamentally changing how you view errors. Failure isn't the opposite of success. It's often the path to success.
Like that Stanford professor quoted, saying failure means you're pushing boundaries, learning new things.
Right. Think about a toddler learning to walk. They fall down constantly. But they don't critique themselves into paralysis, do they?
No, they just get back up.
Exactly. Mistakes are just data. There's that example of the software company with Failure Fridays. They actually celebrated failures to learn from them. Creates a totally different culture around trying things.
Which is the opposite of how we usually feel in these spontaneous moments, right? Mm. Like any mistake is catastrophic.
Precisely. Which leads to maybe the most powerful reframe in this whole section. Stop thinking of these moments as performances.
And think of them as?
Conversations.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Because conversations feel different, lower stakes.
Totally. Less judgment, more about the back and forth, the connection. The pressure just drops instantly when you flame it that way.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So manage the anxiety, challenge the mental blocks like perfectionism. Now let's shift perspective outward, thinking about mindsets that can turn these scary moments into, well, opportunities.
Yeah, and this connects to Ilya Krum's work on mindsets. Basically, how we view a situation shapes everything, what we expect, what we notice, what we do.
And the first big mindset shift here comes from Carol Dweck's work, right? Fixed versus growth mindset.
Exactly. If you have a fixed mindset about, say, giving toasts, you think, I'm just bad at toasts. End of story.
But a growth mindset says,
A growth mindset says, okay, giving toasts feels hard now, but it's a skill I can practice and get better at.
so applying that growth mindset means seeing a tough Q&A or that unexpected toast or even recovering after you stumble, seeing those as chances to learn, not just pass-fail tests of your innate ability.
Absolutely. It makes you more open to the challenge, more likely to seek feedback, maybe even watch how others handle it well and learn from them.
Okay, shift number two sounds huge. It's about shifting focus from you to your audience.
Yes, because when we get nervous, what do? We turn inward. How am I doing? Do I sound okay? Do I look weird?
All about me, me, me.
Right. But if you can consciously pivot, focus outward, ask yourself, who are these people? What do they actually care about right now? What do they need from me in this moment?
It completely changes the game, doesn't it? It stops being about protecting yourself and starts being about serving them.
Yeah, serving them by empowering or equipping, educating, entertaining, inspiring, whatever fits the moment.
And that requires actually paying attention to the context first, reading the room, noticing the mood.
Definitely. And thinking about speakers you admire, it's not just about their style, it's about how they connect, how they tune into their audience's needs.
Okay, mindset shift number three comes from improv. Moving away from yes, but, or just no, towards.
Yes,
Let's
Pam.
explain that one.
It's basically about radical acceptance or validation. Someone offers something, an idea, a comment, even a critique. Instead of immediately shooting it down or finding problems, yes, but, you accept it as their reality for a moment, yes, and then you build on it.
So you're not necessarily agreeing, but you're acknowledging and adding.
Exactly. It forces you to really listen first. And it means there are no truly wrong answers, just new directions, next ideas.
Like that gift game example, where you have to accept whatever crazy imaginary gift your partner gives you and then add to it.
Right. It stops you from trying to control everything and opens things up to unexpected places. Applying that yes and attitude in just everyday conversations, it can really change the dynamic, makes things much more collaborative.
Okay, final mindset shift. This one's about moving on. From dwelling on the past to the next play, and from needing certainty to embracing maybe.
Yeah, next play is super simple but powerful. Something just happened. Maybe you nailed it. Maybe you totally bombed. Acknowledge the feeling for a second. Okay. Then immediately refocus. What's the very next thing I need to do? Don't get stuck ruminating.
Like that CFO example. Fumbled an answer, felt bad for a split second, then immediately move on to tackle the next question. Didn't let the mistake derail the whole interaction.
Exactly. And maybe is related. It's about suspending that instant judgment we have about whether something is good or bad.
Because sometimes things that seem bad turn out okay, or even good.
Often. What feels like a setback now might open a door later. So instead of instantly labeling an event, this is terrible, try telling yourself, maybe. It just loosens that grip of judgment, frees you up mentally to move forward. Some people even carry a little note that says maybe as a reminder.
It's about looking for the potential upside, right? Even in tough spots. Like the layoff example, focusing on making the severance good and brainstorming future possibilities
Yeah.
instead of just dwelling on the negative.
Precisely. It helps you stay constructive, even when things are difficult.
Okay, so we've got strategies for the internal stuff, anxiety mindset. Now let's get really practical. What are the actual tools and techniques we can use in the moment? Listening comes up first. Active listening.
Yeah, it sounds basic, but it's so critical. And it's a skill, like the materials as a muscle you have to build. First step, slow down.
Resist the urge to fill every silence.
Exactly. Pauses are okay. They give you time to think. They let the audience catch up. Practice being comfortable with a little bit of quiet.
And when the other person is talking, you need to really tune in. Eye contact, nodding, showing you're engaged.
Put the phone away. Avoid distractions. And reflect back what you're hearing. Ask open-ended questions to understand more deeply.
You mentioned paying attention to nonverbals too, like someone's feet pointing away.
Yeah, cues like that can give you hints. But don't just assume you know what it means. Use it as a reason to ask a clarifying question. I notice you seem eager to move on. What's on your mind? Or just, what makes you say that? Give people space to think.
And asking those clarifying questions, or paraphrasing what they said, not just repeating, but capturing the essence that buys you thinking time too, doesn't it? While also making sure you understood.
Absolutely. And there's that other technique, commenting on what wasn't said.
Right, like asking the nervous speaker about a time they did feel comfortable.
Yeah. It acknowledges their point, but gently opens up a different angle. Buys you a moment, deepens the conversation.
The stories in the book about this are great. Fred Dust ditching his script in Greece because he sensed the tension.
And Adam Tobin realizing the sci-fi VP's weird question was actually about an internal barrier.
It shows how powerful just truly listening can be. And that killer last question idea from Deber Shiffrin.
Oh, yeah. Is there anything important I haven't asked you about? And then just wait. The silence prompts incredible insights sometimes.
Okay, so listening is job one. Then, once you've listened and your own thoughts are starting to form, how do you organize them quickly? Structure seems key here.
It really is. Structure sounds like the opposite of spontaneous, but having a simple mental framework, it's like a safety net.
Helps you remember what to say. Keeps the audience following.
Yeah, both. And it frees up mental bandwidth because you're not scrambling to figure out how to organize your thoughts. It builds confidence. You just need a couple of go-to structures, not a whole library.
Okay, what's a versatile one? The book calls one the Swiss Army knife.
What? So what now what? Super useful. First, you state the situation or topic, what? Then you explain why it matters, its significance, so what? Finally, you suggest what should happen next, the implication or action. Now what?
Like Sarah Zeitler presenting those slides she hadn't seen. What's on the slide? Why it's relevant? What's the next point?
Exactly. Or even just making small talk about food at a party. This corn dish is amazing. What? I've been looking for a good recipe. So what? Do you happen to have one? Now what? It works everywhere.
Okay, that feels manageable. What about problem solution benefit? Sounds good for pitching ideas.
Definitely. You outline a challenge the audience faces. Problem. You offer your fix solution, and you highlight the advantages for them. Benefit.
Using analogies can help make the solution clear, right?
Absolutely. And remembering that point about not being too perfect, leaving a little room for the audience to jump in with suggestions or concerns can actually make them more receptive. They feel heard.
You can flip the order too, apparently. Start with the benefit to hook them.
Yeah, like the author's son asking for a guitar. Started with the benefit, making music. Then the opportunity, band needs guitars. Then the problem, no guitar. Then the solution, buy me one. Smart kid.
Okay, what about for answering questions? Q&A.
ADD, answer detail detail. First, give a clear, concise answer, A. Then provide specific supporting detail, D. Then, crucially, explain the relevance or value of that detail to the asker, the second D.
That second D, the relevance part, makes it stick more.
Yes, details are memorable, and connecting it back to them makes it impactful. You can practice this by anticipating questions you might get and drafting ADD responses.
And if you genuinely don't know the answer,
just say so. Be honest. I don't have that information right now, but I will find out and get back to you by a specific time. Much better than bluffing.
Okay, structure for feedback. That's always tricky.
The four I's. Information, impact, invitation, implications.
Break that down.
Information. State the specific observable behavior. Your report arrived at 10:10 a.m. Impact. Explain the consequence, which meant we couldn't review it before the 10.3 board meeting. Invitation. Ask for collaboration. How can we work together to make sure it arrives by 10 a.m. next time? Implications. Outline what happens next, positives or negative. If it's on time, we can incorporate your data. If not, we'll have to proceed without it.
It frames it as problem solving, not just criticism. Makes it less personal.
Exactly. Be specific. Explain why it matters. Use we language if possible. Think about why the behavior might be happening beforehand. And focus on just one or two key things. Don't overwhelm them.
Okay, last structure. Apologies. Seems simple, but easy to mess up.
Triple A. Acknowledge. Accept. Announce. Acknowledge the specific thing you did wrong. Accept responsibility. No excuses. No blaming. Announce what action you'll take so it doesn't happen again.
Avoid the non-apology like, I'm sorry if you were offended.
Ugh, yes. Be sincere. Deliver one clear apology using the AAA structure. Then let it land. Don't overdo it. The author's apology example to the student shows how effective this can be.
So structure gives you a map. What's the final tool? Focus. Making the message sharp.
Yeah, especially when you're speaking off the cuff. Clarity is king. Cutting through the noise. Focus has four parts.
Okay.
First, your goal. What information do you want to share? What emotion do you want to evoke? Stories are great for emotion. And what specific action do you want them to take? Be precise. Relevance. Answer their silent question, why should I care? Tailor it to them, their knowledge, their concerns, their motivations. Build curiosity if you can.
Third is accessibility.
Right. Make it understandable. Ditch the jargon. Explain acronyms. Use analogies they can relate to. Don't talk over their heads.
And fourth, concision.
Use the fewest words possible. Less is more. Think bottom line up front. B-L-U-F. Ask yourself, what's the one core thing I need to say? Let the context help you like a visual does for a cartoonist.
Like Steve Jobs saying, 1,000 songs in your pocket. Mm. Instantly clear, focused.
Perfect example. And getting better at focus. It's gradual. Maybe work on clarifying your goal one week, then focus on relevance the next. And don't take any dimension too far. Don't be so it's confusing, for example.
So it all comes back to practice, doesn't it? This isn't just about learning the ideas.
Not at all. Mastering this stuff takes ongoing practice, using these techniques in real life, even in small ways. Doing drills, maybe.
And reflecting on how it went. Not just beating yourself up over mistakes, but noticing what worked, too.
Definitely. Keep a journal, maybe. What went well? What felt awkward? What structure could I have tried? What mindset shift helped? Register the wins.
And getting feedback from people you trust seems important, too. Asking specific questions.
Yeah, not just how did I do, but what's one thing I could have done to make my answer clear?
And anticipating. Thinking ahead about situations where you might get put on the spot and mentally rehearsing how you might handle it using one of these tools.
Exactly. That kind of mental prep helps immensely.
Okay, so wrapping up this deep dive, drawing on all this source material, the core message feels really helpful, actually.
Yeah, I think so too. Spontaneous communication. It's not this fixed thing you're either good at or bad at.
It really is a skill, something you can learn, something you can improve. It just takes that sort of counterintuitive step of preparing for the unprepared moments.
It's about managing your own internal state, the anxiety, the mental habits, shifting your whole perspective from feeling threatened to seeing an opportunity.
And building up that practical toolkit, the listening skills, the structures, the focus techniques.
And by actually practicing this stuff, you really can change those moments from something you dread into situations where you feel, you know, capable, comfortable, able to genuinely connect.
So here's maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on. Building on this idea of seeing spontaneity as opportunity, leaning into that yes and or that maybe mindset.
How might deliberately trying to embrace the unexpected instead of fearing it? How might that open things up for you? Not just in how you talk, but maybe in other parts of your life, too.
Where else are you holding back because you're afraid of not getting it exactly right, of being caught off guard?
What potential path, what surprising opportunity might you be missing out on by always trying to stay in perfect control, avoiding any possibility of a misstep?
Maybe just notice those spontaneous moments that pop up for you this week. And perhaps pick just one tiny thing, one technique, one mindset shift from our conversation today. And just experiment with it.
Yeah, just try it out. See what happens.